I'll try to. So, Peter, thank you very much for the nice introduction, dear audience and dear board member of the board. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk here at Codex. It's a great honor for me. When Peter emailed me the first time, he asked me to talk about one book, which I think within 20 minutes you can do, but it's probably not enough to give an overview of my work. So finally, I will talk about two books, which is also not very much, but I will try to give an insight into my work or how my books are developing. The title of my talk is Stranger in a Strange Land, Projects of a German Book Artist Living in Japan. I've been living for 15 years in Japan, and most of my books have been very much influenced by Japanese themes, which seemed to me more strange than they seemed to actually Japanese people. Today I would like to show you these two projects to illustrate my way of working. I very often do not start with an existing literary text, but I start with a special incident, some event or strange news which spark my interest. And the first project I want to show you is In the High Rise. I started to work on this book in July 2010, and it was completed 1 year later. The very starting point for this book was a short radio report, which I listened to on July 29 in 2010. The news was about Mr. Sōgen Kato, who with 111 years was thought to be Tokyo's oldest living male resident. So please listen to a radio report.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm David Green. Today is a national holiday in Japan. It's Respect for the Aged Day. Lately, though, senior citizens are provoking as much angst as admiration. Last summer, Tokyo's oldest man on record turned out to be mummified remains, and the bones of another would-be centenarian were being stored in her son's backpack. Both cases involved pension fraud. This led to an emergency survey of centenarians nationwide, which revealed that what seems to be an astonishing number, citizens, 230,000 of them, are missing. As Lucy Kraft reports from Tokyo, poor record keeping seems largely to blame.
So the story was to honor his achievement of longevity on Respected for the Aged Day later that year. Officials of the Adachi Ward in Tokyo tried to see several times Mr. Sōgen Kato, but they were always held off by his relatives. So finally, police breaking into the house found the mummified remains of Mr. Kato in a first floor room, covered with a blanket. And there were also found newspapers in the same room, suggesting that Mr. Kato may have died already 32 years ago. In November 1978. So it turned out to be a pension fraud. The daughter and the granddaughter, who were living in the same house, told the police later, "My grandfather shut himself up in a room on the first floor of our home 32 years ago, and we couldn't open the door from the outside. My mother said, 'Leave him in there,' and he was left as he was. I think he's dead." So that was actually in a quotation. So 2 days later, the officials of Tokyo had to admit that they were also missing a 130-year-old woman, Mrs. Fusa Furuya, who was born in 1987. When the officials of the Suginami Ward went to the house where she was registered as living, her 79-year-old daughter told her that she actually had never lived there. She gave them the address of a house in Chiba, which is outside Tokyo, where her younger brother was living. But when officials went to this place, they found out that actually this house had been demolished a few years ago to make way for a motorway. So her disappearance still remains a mystery. Alarmed by these two cases, the welfare ministry started to track down the centenarians. And in summer 2010, there were a number of more than 230,000 people born before 1910 registered as alive. And the oldest missing person was even registered as being an incredible 186 years old. So these immense figures, combined with the Japanese pride of taking such good care of the elderly, made for some very weird news, not only in Japan, but also in other parts of the world. And again, that seemed to prove the country's fame as a bizarre nation. Some even said that Japan is not the nation with the longest life expectancy, but the nation with the most stupid officials. Actually, it turned out that media misread these high figures. They were actually registration errors basing on a very old registration system still used in Japan, which is the Kosiki or Household Register. It turned out that there are about 40,300 centenarians alive in Japan, and the correct number of missing elderly people was about 400. These are not only centenarians, but elderly missing people nationwide. So these are people which are not only registered in this Koseki system, but also in the welfare and insurance system. The number of cases of pension fraud in Japan actually is neither higher nor more bizarre than in any other Western nation. And some of you may still probably remember the case of Thomas Parking from Brooklyn. His mother died in 2003, and he kept getting her pension for more than 6 years and even dressed up as his mother to sign official documents. So this is a picture from a surveillance camera. At some point, I started to talk to the German author Heiko Michael Hartmann about his topic. He's an attorney who worked as civil servant before he started to be a full-time writer. And he very often writes from the perspective of an official. And liking bizarre stories, he was immediately attracted by the theme. So Heiko Michael Hartmann started to write a fictional short story about an exemplary case. And I, by myself, started to research 30 cases of pension fraud, which were uncovered between summer 2010 and spring of 2011 in Japan. I arranged these cases in a list under the following categories. First, the address of the victim. Then, second, name, age, relationship of suspect and the victim. Third, the amount of money obtained by fraud. Fourth, the place where the dead body was hidden. And fifth, a quotation from the police report giving some reason for the fraud. Once police starts investigate a case of crime in Japan, the suspect loses all of his privacy. So names, addresses are published, and it's very difficult to escape the public interest and media. This is a very major contrast to the ignorance before these cases were detected. So Japanese in urban areas, they live very close to each other. And to keep each other's privacy, they very much ignore what is happening next door. This actually makes it very difficult even to understand how you can ignore the signs of a decaying body in your neighbor's wardrobe if you live so close together. The investigations of the police very strongly emphasized on the amount of money, and always the exact sum was listed. So cheating the public by receiving pension payments appears to be a more severe matter than hiding actually a dead body. This is different from Western perspective, where the hiding place, period of time are crucial. And many times in Western newspaper reports, the sum of money is not even quoted at all. What became clear to me when I was working on these cases was that almost all of these cases were not long-planned crimes, but result of unhappy and unlucky lives. Keeping the amount of money and the hiding places in mind and reading the suspect's statements concerning their motifs, similar paths of life were revealed. There were people living with their parents for their whole lives in small apartments, and they've never been able to cope with their own life or earn their own money. And there were sometimes even cases of hikikomori. A hikikomori is someone who completely refuses contact with other people, including close family, and who hardly ever leaves the house or the room he's hiding in for long periods of time, even for years. So depending on the parents' income and pension, these people are unable to change their way of living when the person they depend on dies. They do not know what to do, and recognizing their inability to live on their own, they react like small children, just hide it. So they don't hide the body in any elaborate place, but in the most ordinary place, you can hide something in a small Japanese flat, which is the oshiire, a big wardrobe where you put your futons and clothes. If you read the listed hiding places, most of the bodies were found in the oshiire, wrapped in futons, plastic sheets or blankets. So you have to keep in mind that most Japanese homes in urban areas do not have gardens or basements with huge freezers, which are places that are popular in similar cases in Europe and the USA. So The suspects keep on living as usual, receiving their parents' pension and ignoring the decaying body close to them. They often become even more withdrawn to avoid any contact with the neighbors. So their really unworldly existence is mirrored in 60-year-old Yutaka Takemoto's explanations after being discovered by the police. He said, "With a dead mother, I wouldn't receive any pension." Or even more bizarre, the statement by the granddaughter of Mr. Sogen Kato, the 111-year-old Tokyo citizen, Ms. Tokimi Kato. She said, "My grandfather locked himself up in his room more than 30 years ago to reach the state of a living Buddha." A living Buddha, or Sokushinbutsu, is a Buddhist monk. It's a practice which was practiced by Buddhist monks who caused their own death in a way that resulted in self-mummification. This practice is actually banned today in Japan, but it was practiced until the late 19th century. So for 1,000 days, the monks eat a special diet of nuts and seeds, and together with rigorous physical activity, they strip off their last body fat. For another 1,000 days, they eat only bark and roots, and then they start drinking a poisonous tea, which is made from the sap of the odushi tree, which is usually made used to lacquer bowls. Finally, these monks are locked up in a stone tomb in the lotus position, and their only connection to the outside is a small air tube and a bell. They ring the bell every day, and once the bell is stopped, the tube was removed and the tomb was sealed. After 1,000 days, it was opened, and if the monk had been successfully mummified, he was immediately considered a Buddha and put in the temple for viewing. So here you see some of these monks. Keeping these strange aspects in mind, Heiko Michael Hartmann wrote his story from the perspective of an insurance officer who is tracking cases of fraud. This officer enters the flat of a middle-aged woman who majored in an obscure subject and who officially lives with her elderly mother. The flat is small, the curtains are shut, and it is filled with the intense odor of perfumed candles. It is clear that she has missed the point where she should have decided to change subjects or find a job, but instead continued her unpromising studies, writing a thesis and never gaining a foothold in the academic world. Always depending on her mother's money, she moves into her mother's apartment, hiding the body in a big vessel, and still receiving her pension while continuing her studies. Hartmann points out the tragic life of the daughter in a very subtle way, but also points out the tragicomic aspects of these cases. To combine all of these above-mentioned aspects, I decided to focus on 4 compositional elements for this book. The first is the reduction of color to black and white, standing for the colors of Japanese funerals. The second is the theme of wrapping. So the people did not dig holes or freeze the bodies, but they wrapped the corpse before hiding it. The third, the typography that is reminiscent of newspaper headlines, articles, and listings. And fourth, stripes, standing for the tape used to block off the location of a crime. I laid out the text like newspaper columns, which are printed from polymer plates onto 4 single sheets, which are folded in the middle. A 5th sheet is printed with a list of 30 fraud cases translated into German. These sheets are unfolded by a gatefold sheet, which is then printed with 6 stripes printed from barrier or police tape. The stripe pattern underlines the impression of wrapping or hiding something. It seals the text. The fold sheets are fixed by half-round punch-outs to a long piece of cardboard, which is printed on both sides with the silk-screened list of the 30 cases of pension fraud. This list has a very strong graphical character, and I think even non-Japanese readers notice large amounts of money in relation to the persons listed. I consciously decided to print the list in its original language, as every Japanese person immediately remembers the pension fraud cases from 2010 and 2011, just upon getting a glimpse of it. Non-Japanese readers can find the translated rep list in the 5th gatefold. The book has not a traditional codex book form, but it's more like an object you can unfold and unwrap to disclose the text. This is very important as it symbolizes a big important part of the story. Finally, the silkscreen printed cardboard list is again wrapped into another silkscreen printed cardboard. This is the only portion of the book which contains non-abstract visual information. It's a grid pattern photograph of the house where Mr. Sogan Carter was living with his family. This photograph stands for the loss of privacy if one is suspected of being a criminal, because the full address of Mr. Carter's house was published in the newspapers, and it was actually no problem to go there and take a picture. Finally, the book or the case is wrapped by a white self-adhesive silicone tape printed in large characters with the title and the author's name. And last but not least, it is kept in a semi-transparent acrylic box. So that was the first project. The second book I want to show is a book I did already 10 years ago, but I think it goes somehow well with the first one because it shows very well how some of the social circumstances you can find around the world are changing into something extreme, manifesting Japan's reputation as a bizarre country. So this book is Rules for Certain Success on the Japanese Language University Entrance Exams by Yoshinori Shimizu or Kokugyo Nushi Mondai Hishoho. First, I would like to show you some pictures illustrating Japan's reputation as a bizarre country. You see some strange-shaped watermelons, which are meant as summer gifts, pink shovel cars demolishing a building. There is an old fun park in the middle of Tokyo where you can cruise through the buildings, a dressed-up pet rabbit. So these are all pictures which I took in the last 2 months before we left Japan, so it's nothing which I collected over years, but it's actually something very visible every day. And last but not least, cosplay for pet dogs, which is big fashion now in Japan. And this is a clerk at the Yushima Shrine in Tokyo collecting autumn leaves. In 2002, I was preparing for proficiency tests in the language of Japanese, which is held by the Ministry of Education once a year. This test is consisting of multiple choice questions, and for preparation, you can buy numerous books with previous tests. At that time, I read the short story for the first time, and I very much liked it for its humorous and critical approach towards the time-consuming and expensive testing industry. The protagonist, Ichiro Asaka, is preparing for the university entrance examination in the subject of Japanese. He becomes completely desperate, and finally, a tutor is telling him or explaining him a method how to solve these questions. I very much felt in a similar situation and therefore liked the story even better. The Japanese examination system is also described as examination hell, and it's not only applied to high schools, elementary schools, but even kindergartens. So if you're able to enter the best kindergartens, a promising university career is almost done. But this puts, of course, a lot of pressure on children and students, so you have to keep in mind that children who are 2 years old already have to do these examinations and studying before. So a whole industry to support this examination preparation has developed in Japan, and there are countless prep schools specializing in special university entrance examinations. Students start to prepare years in advance, investing a lot of time and money. To be on top form on the day of the examination, lately something has appeared in Tokyo which is offered by hotels, entrance examination packages. That means if you go with it's mostly the mother accompanying the examinee to the city where the examination takes part, you book this package in a hotel, you get a relaxation treatment the day before, you get a special nutritious breakfast, and the mother gets a beauty treatment while the examination is taking part. So these examinations are held in a 2-week period in February and gain very much public interest. For example, the questions of University of Tokyo are published in major newspapers, and there's also significant media coverage in the university sites. So this is a picture when the results are published in Tokyo University. They really celebrate the people who passed the examinations. It's a very time-consuming and boring process to prepare for this, and keeping this in mind, I decided to illustrate the book with hand-stamped patterns of marks which are used by teachers to mark tests and homeworks. So these marks range from done very well to average to try harder. And you see here a picture of original marks. I reduced them in size and mounted 9 of them together to a bigger stamp, which fits into a special grid system together with the text. This was the only book which I ever did where someone helped me stamping, because it was so time consuming that the student of a friend of me, I asked her to do the stamping together with me. Here you see her. The book has two beginnings. On one hand, the Japanese original text, and on the other hand, the German translation, which was done by Katja Karsing for this edition. It meets in the middle with the imprint. Each Japanese page refers to its counterpart in color and content. The printed story is interrupted by sample examination questions printed in a bold font. These questions show the difficulty of the examination system. Though one understands every individual sentence, the questions and suggested answers seem to make no sense. Or, which is even worse, they all seem to be right. Here you see some samples of the book. In contrast to the hand-stamped marks, the text is letterpress printed from zinc cliché on thin Mitsumata paper, which lets the previous pages shine through. The book is stitched to a Gumpy-covered Koso cardboard with a Japanese binding and a twisted paper cord. So this paper cord is a little bit inset to not get damaged. As a pattern, I printed one single stamp in its original size, saying, "You have to try harder." This is actually the worst mark you can get. It's just a round circle, and it's a contrast to all the petals and flowers for the better marks. The book is kept in a padded case in the shape of an omamori, which is a charm that are sold at Shinto shrines. The model for this book was an omamori, which I got at the Yushima shrine in Tokyo. This is a shrine which is dedicated to the Temmangu sect, and it's for special examination situations. There are more than 12,000 shrines dedicated to this examination Temmangu sect in Japan, and they're visited by countless students every year. I got the idea when I started to work on this book, and I went to visit the shrine. It was time of entrance examinations, and it was full of students asking for good examination results. They give a donation to the shrine. They buy wooden imma plates, which they fill in and hang on these metal racks. And they also buy these small charms, which they bring to the examination site, and they should bring them luck for the examination. Instead of the normal Gakugyo Mamori, which means charm for successful studying, I embroidered the title on the padded case, the title of the story, which goes one step beyond because it promises a method for safe passing. It's always difficult to describe the thoughts behind a book, but I hope I was able to give you some insight into my work or how I work. Thank you very much for the attention. Yes? They like it. No, for them it's actually quite interesting how my approach is. So I'm not so much fixed. I'm not educated or not grown up in Japan, so I'm not so much stuck into these cultural things like how you use paper, what you should do with the paper. I'm much more free. So I think the most surprising thing for them is how I work with the paper, actually, and what I do with the paper. So they have these long, long traditions, and every child and every student is somehow educated or brought up with these traditions. So for them, it's somehow a hurdle to use the paper in some ways that I like to do. But they like it, actually. It's positive reaction. Yes, yes. You see these cosplay things. So the Japanese, they have a lot of humor. They like this. Yes? It's still difficult. It's like a foreign country for me now. Well, yeah, I can tell maybe in 10 years, but it's a long process, so it's not so easy. And you're not so open-minded. If you go to a foreign country, you're very open-minded. If you go to your own country, you are much more strict and intolerant, I would say. Yes? I hope so. Yeah. I think so, yes. So that's actually something which is interesting, because when I got back to Germany, I very much kept my eyes open. So I'm just seeing the country probably differently from Germans. And I try to keep this, to keep my eyes open. Yes? My parents? My parents are still alive. We can phone them. Yes, yeah, they are quite old, actually. But they still live on their own. And I have a lot of, I have a few sisters. And they all make their own living, actually. So I hope. Something else? I get very excited if I have one of these ideas, like listening to this radio report, and then I think, wow, that's a theme, or these examination questions. But then it slows down, and I start collecting material. So my books always need time, at least 1 year. And it's like maybe every one of you experienced some point. At some point, you are very, very excited, but then you think, maybe not. And it's a long process, and my books develop while I make them. So I start with some idea, with some designs. And if you see all my mock-ups, and the result is always completely different from what I did in the beginning. So it's difficult to say what is the most exciting point, but I always try to keep on excited while making it.
Very good. Your humor came across completely.